Welcome to the Context Machine. It's getting hot in here. And this is episode 658. I'm Brian Chaffin.
And I'm a palindrome. No, wait. I'm Jeff Gamet. Please make sure to check us out at our new home, contextmachine.io. We should probably change the wording on that at some point.
I'm going to highlight new and delete. So the next time it'll be right. You can also use contextmachine.io to reach out to us or find us on Mastodon at contextmachine.
Brian?
Yep.
Big news.
Yep.
Today's show,
yeah,
sponsored by LinkedIn Jobs.
Great. We're going to tell you more about them later in the show.
Oh, that's called foreshadowing, people. Is it foreshadowing when we tell them what we're going to do?
It's a threat.
Or a promise, depending on your perspective.
Yes, indeed. Apple did a media thing. They did I guess it's still going on, isn't it? Today's the last day.
You are so plugged in. Brian has his pulse on the Apple developer community.
Yes, I do.
Developer conference, worldwide developer conference runs all week.
Week. So anyway, the WWDC happened and we did get some announcements as
the WWDC happened.
Yes. And so we're going to talk about it.
Okay, everyone, what Brian means is that Apple did a keynote event for WWDC on Monday.
Yes. Now, did you watch it? Because I'm going to need you to tell me what happened.
I did.
I'm kidding. Yeah. I'm kidding. I watched it.
So am I.
I watched it 1.5 times.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
I meant to watch it twice. But you were pestering me to get recording because apparently you have another show to do after this or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I do. And you wanted to make sure that this is total behind the scenes stuff, people. Mm. Brian wanted to make sure that the first time I really talk about all of the keynote announcements, that I'm doing it first with him.
Yes, I didn't want your sloppy seconds.
And so what you're saying is that
actually, I think Ginsburg, I told you
in touch with iOS, he's going to get that.
I think I actually said I didn't want your cloppy seconds.
You said cloppy seconds. Yes, that's exactly what you said.
That was a typo.
Oh, well, I'm going to run with it. And for me, it is now part of my lexicon.
Yeah, fair enough.
Cloppy seconds.
Cloppy seconds, yeah. Let's see. Vision OS. They're calling it Vision OS 2. I'm calling it 0.9. Maybe 1.0.
Well, I mean, your joke stands and it totally works. Everyone needs to keep in mind that this is modus operandi for Apple. When the iPhone was initially released, the software on it, the operating system, was very much beta.
The same thing with Apple Watch.
Same thing with Apple Watch.
Same
yeah.
thing with the iPad. Because when Apple released iPad, Apple had no idea what we were going to do. You know, I've got that whole thing. I've been milking it for years.
Yeah. Where I talk about this. That's fair.
And but Apple had no idea what we were going to do with the iPad when it was released.
Yeah. And I think to some degree they're still trying to figure that out.
Maybe.
But they're getting closer, hopefully. I think it should actually be called Vision OS 1, but they can't because Vision OS is already out.
So it'll be Vision OS 2. They already released Vision OS 1. But anyway, regardless, I'm glad they let off with it because I'd actually forgotten what they said when I started rewatching the show earlier today.
Well, I mean, I can share with you what I see is the big things out of Vision OS.
Okay, great.
And I know a lot of people watch that part and they're like, yeah, whatever. And they didn't feel like there are any big announcements, but I felt there were important announcements. First thing, the new gesture navigation with the different taps and wrist movements that are more subtle.
Yeah, that's an improvement for sure.
It's not just an improvement. It's a big thing for accessibility. If you're someone who has motor control issues or some other issue that prevents you from having the fine motor control that some of the gestures would otherwise require, this is a huge step forward in accessibility. Also, mouse support and the ability to see the keyboard all the time. What this tells me is that Apple is looking at all of this as a way to make this device a more universal standalone computing platform for a much wider audience. And a lot of people, they're just like, oh, yeah, I can use a mouse now. But I was looking at those things and I'm like, holy crap, this takes Vision OS and Vision Pro and changes it from here's this cool thing you can wear on your face to a thing where we can say Apple has a goal for usability. And I thought that was just a really, really important part of the announcements.
Okay. Everything you just said, yes. But I think that the gestures and the gesture control stuff that was added will actually be important for the rest of us too.
Absolutely. And this is something that happens every time Apple does some sort of accessibility thing. It benefits everyone.
Yeah. What I didn't see and hope to see in the shipping product is the ability for the device to work in the dark. And it's possible that the Apple Vision Pro doesn't have the right sensors to do that. It's possible. I think that it does. And I think that Apple either hasn't gotten it where they want it, you know, they haven't gotten it right yet, or they just haven't really thought about it. But I feel like you need to be able to lay in bed and use your Apple Vision Pro without having a light on. And right now, you can't.
Yeah, that may very well be a thing that's coming. We don't get to see all of the new features in this keynote.
Right.
This is about highlighting stuff and letting developers know, hey, we haven't forgotten this as a product. Related to that, the new APIs and frameworks that will be available to developers.
Yeah.
That's important. If you want to have a successful platform, you need to have your developers on board, and this will go a long way towards that.
Now, the giant Mac screen.
I'm sure that's going to be useful for some people, and is very welcome. To me, that wasn't a major announcement for this. But then again, look at the way I'm coming into how I'm seeing value in the announcements. It's the little things for accessibility and usability and making the device accessible to a wider audience with a wider range of personal physical attributes.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. But I feel so. I haven't been compelled to sit here as I've mentioned this before, so this will possibly be repetitive if you've been paying attention, which I don't recommend.
I never do.
But, you know, I've got two studio displays in front of me and a giant TV also on my desk. Mm-hmm. I've got the privileged boy playground here. And I haven't been interested in using the third display via the Vision Pro, in part because I don't want to look at my gorgeous studio displays through the Vision Pro. It's not as high resolution as real life. It's just not. Okay. I'm thinking, though, that this large display could make a much more compelling reason for people to use their Vision Pro with their Mac when they're especially on the go.
Yeah, that's legit. Yep.
I feel like the large display, that wraparound display that they're doing for the Mac with Vision Pro, Vision OS 2, could be a compelling use for more people.
I think it will be. I mean,
I accept your apology.
It's just not as important to me as some of the other features, but I get that it's going to be valuable to a lot of people. Like being able to do the conversion from 2D images into spatial photos, that's going to be huge for some people.
Wait, you can convert? I missed that.
That's,
you can convert. Yeah. Pictures that you've taken without using the spatial, the photography feature.
Yes, you'll be able to convert those into spatial photos.
How on earth?
How many times did you not watch this?
I actually watched this.
They even demoed an image.
Huh.
So, really? Yeah, that's going to be a big thing for some people. Being able to trim video in the Photos app on Vision Pro, that's going to be a big thing. Final Cut Pro getting support for spatial video editing.
Yep.
That's going to be a big thing.
Yep, fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff they're doing in here that's going to be really valuable. And I like that the things that that to me were important announcements are not the same things that were important announcements for you. So also, I accept your apology.
All right, fair enough.
I learned it from you, okay?
Let's move on to iOS 18.
All right. We can do that.
So did they announce anything new? I sent you two notes today.
You did. And
what did I send to you? I said that there is
the lock app lock feature.
Oh yeah.
Also hidden apps to go along with that.
Lock an app. So this is where you can have apps that you designated as being locked essentially. And if you have given your device over to someone else to use, they basically can't get to it or the data contained in those apps. It's not available to other apps.
Yeah. So I see like this as a great thing for my banking apps.
Banking, crypto, me as a writer, I can keep people from snooping at my writing. Not that anyone really wants to. But
there's some nice peace of mind to go along with that.
If I was a bigger writer, it'd be great.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And how about not only locking them, but hiding them as well?
Yes. Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. And I also noted that, so you and I yesterday, before the fire alarm extravaganza started at my house.
Right. Sorry, everyone. You missed that.
Yes. Sorry. That's the way to put it. We were talking about the Canon lens. I forget the name of it. Did you catch the name?
Of course I did, because I've watched the whole thing. All right. So Canon has a new lens for immersive video for the RFS DSLR product line that they make. Okay,
but did you catch the name of the lens? No, you didn't. I accept your apology. Because it didn't
say a name. Hey, I had a name. It's for the RFS camera.
Yeah, you got the name of the camera. And we were talking about, like, how does it do that? Like, it seems like it would have to record the data differently. And it turns out that we were probably right in our guess on that because it does only work with one camera. So this lens basically has two points for the light to come in. Mm-hmm. And so it's turning your Canon, whatever that crap that camera's called.
It's the RFS camera line. So I believe it is more than one camera model in that line. Can use this.
Okay, let's go with that. Anyway, it turns your Canon camera into something that can take spatial audio, and it's doing it through the lens.
It actually does spatial video.
Spatial video, yes.
I'm being a butt because I can.
No, it's very important to be a butt. So anyway, it was... So we confirmed what you didn't know we had speculated.
That's fantastic. I'm glad we did that.
Yeah, yes.
That was actually an important announcement as well, as was the Blackmagic Design immersive video camera, which is part of a whole Blackmagic end-to-end recording solution for immersive video. The reason that's important is because you have legit, well-known, high-end camera makers saying, we will support
Spatial computing. Like, here we are. So Canon's doing it, I think, the smarter way, because Canon is introducing a lens that will work with a camera or camera line. Right?
I think Blackmagic is doing it in a really good way too, because
let me finish.
They're hitting different markets, but okay, go ahead and finish, and then I'll accept your apology.
So everyone who's got that camera can get this lens and record spatial videos, and that's great and that's terrific. But it's not a camera that's limited to people who are doing spatial videos. This Blackmagic camera is in fact limited to people who want to do spatial videos.
Right. So think video production companies.
Yeah, fair enough.
Movie studios. So, yeah, we're covering a wide spectrum of potential video makers with these products.
Yeah, but at the end, they're making devices for content that is aimed at a subset of specific hardware uses, and that's what, to Jeff's point, that's why this is important, because this mm-hmm. is a strong signal for the market. I wonder if Apple paid. I kind of imagine they didn't pay these companies to do this,
but they probably worked with them to make sure.
I'm sure they worked with them. I don't know, mm-hmm. but I'm sure. So anyway, that was cool. Now, I actually feel like the biggest, besides the Apple Intelligence stuff, which we're going to get to, that the biggest announcement was Genmoji.
Yeah, you know, we can talk about that for a minute, and then do the LinkedIn sponsor part, and then just wrap up, because what else is there really?
Well, no, we're not going to do that. But Genmoji is... So, first of all, Apple has finally opened Tapbacks up to the entire emoji collection. So, rather than having to decide, do I want to do exclamation points, a thumbs up, a thumbs down... Wait, can you even do a thumbs down? Yeah, you can do a thumbs down.
I'm sure
you can. You can do a ha-ha, the heart, thumbs up, thumbs down, exclamation point, or a question mark. And that, to be honest, though, has been great, but I have often wanted to be able to do other emojis, especially after spending a lot of time in Discord, when you can, in fact, react with all the things.
Mm-hmm.
So Apple is bringing that to iOS. I wonder if it'll be in Sequoia, too. Surely it will be. They haven't always announced a release new features on for iMessage on Sequoia on macOS and iOS, but I'm hoping they'll do it in this case.
Well, in with the way they did the announcements for features, and the way they showed a lot of the features, and then also some of the things they said, if it's something that isn't hardware specific or device specific, then it's going to most likely be across all the devices.
Okay,
fair enough. Like for example, the being able to use any emoji for the tap back thing, that's not just iPhone, because I've been playing with it on the iPad.
Okay, good. Well, right, great. And iOS and iPadOS, that's one thing. But if, anyway, so I'm hoping it'll be on macOS because I do most of my iMessaging on my Mac, and personally, that's just, you know, the way I work. And I love the fact that we're going to be able to use any emoji we want for tap back, and that's great. But I thought the Genmoji was greater. And Genmoji is essentially, it's a generative thing where you can describe the emoji you want and essentially create emojis on the fly. How fun is that?
That's super cool. And I like that. For people that are using devices that don't natively support Genmoji, they will still see the Genmoji. It will just show up as a separate graphic in their text message chain.
Okay, say that again.
Okay, let's say I have iOS 18 on my phone. You have iOS 17 on your phone.
Yeah.
I send you a Genmoji.
Yeah.
iOS 17 doesn't know what that is.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter because it will show up in line. The image of the Genmoji will still show up in line. Right. It'll just show up as a separate graphic.
Right. Yeah, of course. And that's super fun. So I'm really guessing that Genmoji is going to be one of those things that we don't really invest a lot of time in, but
probably not. But there will be a subset that loves it,
and we'll probably, in more particularly, I think that many of us will create 3 to 5 Genmojis that we really love and we use them all the time.
Sure, like what I've done with Memojis that I use as stickers. Yeah. I have like 2 or 3 that I use, and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, same.
Are you running the developer beta on any devices? No. Okay, I assume not, but I wanted to make sure.
I might run a public beta on my iPad mini since I'm not otherwise using my iPad mini. But that'll require a lot of effort.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's that. I am running the beta on my iPad mini.
Yeah.
And so I've been able to play with some things like the new home screen layout stuff.
Yeah.
And it's nice. It's also the first developer beta, and there are features that aren't working correctly. But overall, I mean, it's nice because now you can actually really arrange icons in a way that's useful to you. My advice would be start with a blank home screen and set it up. Don't do like I did and just take your main home screen that's already full of stuff and try and move stuff around and get it the way you want it, because it's just like icons just dancing around everywhere completely out of your control. But still it works, and it's nice being able to organize stuff the way you want. Also having the little handles on widgets so you can resize them, and see how they look as you're resizing them, and they automatically switch to the correct view for whatever size they are. That's nice.
Right.
That saves you some steps right there.
So the ability to shift the color theme for your icons to whatever, you know, whatever you choose.
Yep. I have played with that.
I've seen some people on Threads being very critical of that because they decided to stop on a color that looks awful And they're calling this a mistake on Apple's part. And I'm thinking that I feel like this would be a mistake on the user's part who chose that color.
It's totally a mistake on the user's part.
It's like I feel like that's someone who's looking for something to complain about.
I agree completely.
Because you just wouldn't stop on the color that you want. You don't or keep going after you stop on the bad color. Don't stop on the bad color.
Right. Don't stop on the bad color. Yet when I was playing with it, of course, it was very easy to find a color that just sucked. But at the same time, it was also very easy to use the sliders and move through the color spectrum and the brightness, use the brightness slider.
Go ahead.
No, at one point I ended up with a tint that actually really liked, and it was almost like having grayscale icons. Hmm. And it was super easy on my eyes.
You know, I've got that it needs to be as it's supposed to be thing going. So I don't think I'll use this.
I've already turned it off because I want to see the colors the way they're supposed to be. But I like that I had the ability to really customize it. I did find a bug, at least for me, it's a bug that I need to report. I tried to use the eyedropper in that feature to pick a color, and it just locked up my iPad hard.
Oh, nice. That's good.
Yeah.
So I don't feel like you're holding it wrong about this.
No, we're not.
I really feel like this particular criticism coming from some corners is freaking ridiculous.
I agree. Yep.
By the way, you sent me a clown emoji in reaction to one of my text messages to you, which I get because that's entirely appropriate. And it shows up as as if you were an Android user.
Yes, because you don't have iOS 18 running on any of your devices yet. Now, for me, looking at the same conversation on my Mac, I see it exactly the way you do.
Right.
So
you see the clown
in our conversation, it says reacted to with a clown emoji.
Yeah. Wait, it says that for you.
So too? Now you've seen how it works.
No, you've got the clown sitting at the top of the message, right?
See, this is the problem with our relationship. You just don't listen to me, man. No, I said when I looked at it on my Mac.
Oh, right. Speaking of Mac, I think you called it macOS Tall Trees.
It's macOS Tall Trees. Yep.
I don't have any problem remembering Sequoia. As a matter of fact, I feel like they used Sequoia ages ago. Just seems like they did. But anyway, apparently they didn't because they're using it now.
Well, the current version of macOS to me is macOS Wine Country. Mm-hmm. This one's macOS Tall Trees. And I just have some sort of
macOS Big
dysfunction.
Rock.
macOS Big Rock. Yep.
Anyway,
yep.
So I don't really remember anything about the Sequoia presentation. And this time I'm being real.
Okay. Well, and this time I'm being real. Okay. So if you remember a lot of stuff from the iOS 18 presentation, you remember a lot of stuff from the macOS Tall Tree section.
Okay.
Because it's basically the same apps, but the other thing that, okay, so there's a couple things that you'll get, or that'll be important, I think, for Tall Tree users, as long as you're also running iOS 18. And the big one, I think, is iPhone mirroring and continuity, where you can remotely access your iPhone and have it just show up on your screen on your Mac.
Yeah.
And you use it as if it was physically in your hand. that's huge. And it's not just is it a huge thing. Yes, it is absolutely huge.
Mm. All right, make your case.
All right. So it's not just a matter of, oh, I don't want to reach over to the other table to pick up my iPhone and do this thing. It's about interactivity or interconnectivity between your devices. So yes, you can do all your stuff on your iPhone as if it was physically in your hand, but you can also have all your iPhone notifications appearing on your Mac. So for me, this tells me I can set up a unified place for notifications. And then and that will be my iPhone. And then all my notifications will be based on what's happening from my iPhone. And it doesn't matter what device I'm on. I see just the notifications I want. So it's not like I have to go to my Mac for one notification, iPhone for another notification. So that's a big thing. The other thing that's going to be really big for a lot of people is app interaction. So let's say you are working in a document on your Mac, but you have content on your iPhone that's just on your iPhone right now. Maybe you took some photos, just as an example, or a video. So you don't have to connect devices physically or wait for some iCloud sync or whatever. You just show your iPhone on your Mac, find the content that you want, and drag it into the document or folder or whatever on your Mac where it needs to go. So this to me is the thing that lets me have, I just said unified messaging, but now it's unified interface for everything that I'm working on. And my Mac at that point becomes the nexus for all of my projects.
All right, fair enough.
Let's see, what other things are important in tall trees? That was like the big thing that's unique just for tall trees, because so much of the other stuff is also on iPhone and iPad. How about the window tiling thing? And I know someone, probably not one of our listeners, but someone out there is probably already saying, Windows had that for years. Doesn't matter who has it first. It matters that you have a feature that's useful to you. Mac has a lot of stuff first that Windows gets later.
Yeah, but okay, hold on. We used to get our nose. I used to get my nose bent out of shape whenever Android or Windows would do something that had been on Mac for a while. So I get that bit of snark. I mean, I agree with you. The important thing is that we've got it now. But, you know, go ahead, take your victory lap, and let's move on.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, they can have their superficial moment of joy and move on. Yeah, there you go. You know, there's a couple other things that we haven't hit on that we should probably mention. One is the SOS text messaging, or excuse me, the satellite text messaging.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, that is. I think that'd be really cool for people who actually do things.
Yeah. Yes. So when they showed it, the impression that I got was that you can send a message like, oh my God, I'm in trouble. I need help. Brian, I'm stuck out in the middle of nowhere. Show up with a snack and some gas. And then you get a message because it goes through a satellite, even though I don't have cell coverage. And then I just wait. And it turns out the way it was initially presented isn't exactly right. It's literally two-way texting. So I can be in the middle of nowhere with an iPhone 14 or newer and have no coverage and need to send you a message. I can, and you can reply to it. You cannot initiate a message to me as the person who's in civilization and have it go to the satellite and out to me. So you're not going to get, like, you're out in the middle of nowhere in the mountains and you start getting spam text messages. That's not going to happen. But if I initiate a conversation with you, we can now have a two-way conversation.
I see. That makes sense.
Yeah, it's going to save lives. I'm certain of it.
I'm sure. I'm sure we'll be getting some stories along those lines.
Speaking of saving lives, the check-in feature that we got in Messages on the iPhone in iOS 17 comes to Apple Watch. So you have another way to initiate a check-in message with friends. And so that makes it more convenient in many cases. It also makes it more discreet. And if you're in a situation where you have initiated a check-in from your watch and your phone gets taken from you, but they don't take your watch, then the tracking is still active because it's on your watch.
Well, yay.
So anyhow, another life-saving feature.
There are some changes in Safari that I thought were pretty cool. The fact that Safari will say, hey, there's a video on this page, and give you access to your system controls for controlling the video. I like that.
That's cool.
Yep. I always get a little torn about Reader because I feel like it's a way of ripping off content providers because it strips out all the ads.
And I get that and I blame Google for this problem.
Fair enough. The ability to pull up additional information about a site, that is the Apple titles it quickly pull up relevant info from a site. And their example is there's a hotel and you can get directions by hovering over this button that is at the Safari level. You're not dependent upon the site maker to give you access to that information. So you can get your directions directly on Maps and go.
Okay. That's cool. That's very and cool.
What do you want to say about passwords?
I am so glad that Apple is releasing this app. The average Mac user has not had a legit proper password management app until Tall Trees and iOS 18 and iPadOS 18 comes out. So having this to take over the mediocre solution that Keychain is, I think is fantastic. I have played with this app a little bit, and I think the interface is really nice. It's really usable. And I like that it has the categories built in, or several categories built in already. And one of the categories tells you the logins you have that have problems with them. So, like, if it's for a website where login information has been compromised, you'll be able to see that right away.
Yeah, but I think Keychain already did that. But and that's fine. And 1Password certainly did.
Who knew? Who could use it?
Fair enough. Well, 1Password did have that.
So 1Password has done this for a long time.
Yeah. Do you think this is going to put 1Password out of business?
Absolutely not. No,
why? No,
absolutely not. What? Okay. Well, first, 1Password does a lot more than Apple's Passwords app. So for people that need more than what Apple's app does, just like we've had with so many other apps in the past, 1Password will still be a completely viable option. Then there's a couple other things to take into consideration here. One, 1Password, just like many other apps, utility apps that we have relied on over the years, transitioned a long time ago from being a single user Mac only app to being an enterprise product. So at this point, you and I as individual users, we are not the true money source for Agile.
Fair enough.
So if you and I and most of the actually at this point probably all of the individual users on Mac and iOS said, I'm out, I'm not going to use it anymore, it's not going to have a serious impact on the company. Also, keep in mind, we are not living in a vacuum. People forget that this is a product that also supports Windows. So there's the whole Windows market beyond Mac users. So that,
yeah, and no, especially
this is not getting Sherlocked,
especially for Mac users who also have to work with Windows.
Mm-hmm.
So does passwords support one-time passwords?
Yes. For a lot of people, this is the only solution they need. I expect that there are 1Password users that will decide that this does everything they need, and they'll get rid of their subscription.
Yeah, I'm sure. There will definitely and, be some. But this and also this, sort of like mm-hmm. elevates the need for this. So there could be people who are brought into passwords who eventually decide that they need more. That's very possible too.
Yeah. And that's how these tools work. You remember when Apple added in the ability to have the text shortcuts so you could type an abbreviation and it would expand out into whole words for you, and everyone was like, oop, text expander got Sherlocked.
Mm-hmm.
No, they didn't. And it's the same thing, because there's a feature set that Apple offers, and then the third party developers, they're offering more, and of course also catering to enterprise customers.
Yeah, so, fair enough.
Yeah, these are great entry points, and for some people, it's all they'll need. But for everyone else, there are those third party options. So we don't need to worry that Agile Bits is about to go out of business.
All right, yay!
Hey Brian, I played with the Math Notes app.
Oh yeah, and? You liked it?
Oh, holy forking shirt balls! this is fracking amazing.
So and this would be
you wouldn't think
this would be the iPad calculator finally.
Yeah. So Apple gets no love for me for finally releasing a calculator app on the iPad that should native. Have been there when the original iPad came out.
Yes.
However, Math Notes is fracking awesome.
Yeah, I also am not going to give Apple a pass for not giving us a native calculator app on the iPad all this time. I'm not going to give them a pass for that. I'm glad it's here now, and Math Notes does in fact seem really exciting and cool.
I
don't know if I'll ever actually use it, but it's really cool.
You will end up using it. You will end up thinking of ways like, oh, I should do some math. And you'll just sit there and start writing stuff out.
That doesn't seem likely.
Okay. I will do that. I'm just projecting myself on you.
All right, fair enough. Fair enough.
No, it is so cool. I've been messing around with Math Notes. And by the way, it works in the Notes app too. So I've been messing around with it for a couple days, and I haven't even gotten to the point with having it generate graphs for me. So, I mean, there's so much that it will do, and I've only scratched the surface just coming up with ridiculous equations for it to solve.
I feel like some one developer got hot and bothered about doing this on the iPad. And then several someones above them gave them the okay to do it.
Yeah, well, my guess is that you're right, and that apps like, what is it, Solver, were inspirations for doing something like this.
Apple does have the App Store data to go off of.
Yeah.
Which,
but it is absolutely fantastic. And there've been a couple times where I've just stopped what I've been working on and grabbed my iPad mini and just started adding numbers. And then while, you know, I've written out some numbers that are being added or multiplied together or whatever, and then I'll just throw a square root sign around that and then parentheses and turn it into a crazy fraction and then add more stuff and then just keep messing with it and watching the solution change in real time.
Man, you live
just to see what it does.
You live a wild and crazy life. Do you know what else is
wild? I, sir, am out of control.
You are out of control. Do you know what else is out of control?
I can't wait to hear.
LinkedIn Jobs. They're sponsoring us this week. LinkedIn is not just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else. Even those who aren't actively searching for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. I'm going to say that again. LinkedIn will help you find not just people who are actively searching for a new job, but people who aren't actively searching for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. You can hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. LinkedIn knows that small businesses are wearing so many hats that might not have the time or resources to hire. I'm looking at you, Mr. Small Business Person, who doesn't have an HR department. LinkedIn is constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. And the thing that I like, the thing that I think is the bee's knees, is their dashboard, because the dashboard puts everything you need at your fingertips. Got your job candidates, you got your jobs, you got your job descriptions, you got your qualifier questions, you've got everything right there at your fingertips. The dashboard is what makes LinkedIn Jobs so good. And you can post your job for free at linkedin.com/ACM. That's linkedin.com/ACM to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Wow. Thank you, LinkedIn Jobs, for being our sponsor.
Thank you very much. So Apple did these, you know, we got the OS Dog and Pony Show, right?
Yep.
And then they did a whole, I think it was like a half hour on Apple Intelligence, which is the most obvious name in hindsight.
Mm-hmm.
And
AI.
AI. Apple
Intelligence.
Yeah. Accidental intelligence. Artificial intelligence.
Do you like the tagline, AI for the rest of us?
Is that their
title? It's a throwback.
Did they use that?
What was the Mac called?
It was the computer for the rest of us.
Yeah. And now it's AI for the rest of us.
Yes, I did. I didn't realize they were actually using that as a tagline. So that's great. That's cool. And the thing above and beyond the obvious name for it, again, in hindsight, now that they announced it, is the fact that I feel like Apple's approach to this has been to give us artificial intelligence that is helping us, that is like essentially helping us put together information, and it rather than the generative AI schlop that's already out there.
I agree. Apple has figured out a way to give us this technology in a way that enhances what we do and makes it easier to interact with all of our stuff in a way that makes sense.
Yeah, like they're doing, I think, email descriptions, email summaries. That I thought that was terrific. There were all kinds of things in the Apple Intelligence preview that I was very excited about, until we got to the bolt-on ChatGPT nonsense. Okay, the last time we talked about this, you had not seen that yet.
And I did, finally.
Okay, before we talk about it, did you agree with my assessment?
I agree with your assessment. Felt like when they got to the end of talking about Apple Intelligence, Tim could have said, "We've talked about so many beautiful things today, and thanks for joining us," and wrapped it up, and it would have been fine. But then they did the ChatGPT thing, and as I'm watching it, all I could think was, why? Which then got followed with, and this is the key thing that the media is going to cover.
Yep.
Nothing else from the event is all going to be Apple partners with ChatGPT for AI.
And that's absolutely been the case. So it's been kind of infuriating because I feel like Apple Intelligence is freaking brilliant. It is the AI that I have wanted.
Yeah, I agree. It's useful for me, and it helps me be more productive in a meaningful way.
And was not built on stolen data.
Yes, it was.
Explain.
Turns out, this is something I saw today. Apparently, Apple did the exact same scraping as everyone else. It's all built on stolen data, the whole damn thing.
Dang it, really? Why didn't you send me a link?
Because I forgot that it was this morning when I was doing other stuff, and I see the stuff come through, and I'm like, oh, really, people? And forgot about it. I put it out of my.
So who's reporting this? We really should have talked about this before we started.
Yeah, well, you know, top men. Yeah. So here's the key thing. We train our foundation models on licensed data, including data selected to enhance specific features, as well as publicly available data collected by our web crawler, Applebot.
Well, crap. So the issue here is that this is built on stolen data just as much as
all the others.
All the other generative AI stuff. God,
yeah.
Dang it. This.
Yeah.
So, so publishers can opt out now. But, you know, their stuff's already been used to. Yeah,
but it's too late.
All right. So, again, my issue with all of the AI stuff, well, we've talked about this. We've talked about this a lot. It's this notion. Okay. So, Apple Intelligence is not a regurgibot. It is, I feel, like it is presenting information to us in new and useful ways, but
yet
it is still apparently built off of things that are stolen from you and me and everybody else without our consent, without compensation.
Yes.
So now Apple says that they did license stuff too, which again is great for those companies that got a little money, but you know, the users who ended up inevitably contributing that information that was then licensed out were not consenting or paid.
Correct. It's very frustrating because for the implementation, Apple got it right. Our data, when we're interacting with Apple Intelligence, is managed locally. The requests are managed locally. Everything it remains private on device, except for the stuff that goes beyond what the horsepower of an M series device or an iPhone 15 Pro or Pro Max can handle with their new AI chip. And then that goes to private cloud compute, which is Apple's own hardware, like literally their own hardware. It's running on their own processors that handles that as a private request and then sends the data back and then does not store anything about your request on their servers. And they even went so far as to say, and we're making the software that runs all of this available for review, so that you can ensure that the privacy is legit.
But so the models,
they're getting it right. But
they're getting all of these things right. But the model is based on stolen data, and that's driving me nuts. Dang it!
Yeah.
Dang it! And then
sorry.
And then the well, it turns out the insult injury. I didn't realize I had been injured or insulted at the time. But the they bolted on ChatGPT. Like, you can basically send the command out through to ChatGPT through Apple. Supposedly Apple will strip out your identifying stuff, whatever. But it is very much a bolt-on product.
It is.
And yep. I hate that. I don't know why they did that. I don't know why they would risk the obvious thing of having everybody focusing on ChatGPT. Who cares? ChatGPT, who cares about ChatGPT? Who cares about this crappy product? It is like ChatGPT does not matter in the grand scheme of things.
Except right now it does.
Right now it does.
Say that.
It is a tempest in a teacup, ChatGPT. And everything that Apple has done on its own, using our stolen data, is much more impressive and much more important in the long run. And I don't understand why Apple would risk this narrative by announcing this the way they did, and let alone implementing it the way they did.
Yeah.
Apple Intelligence was everything they needed to announce. They did not need to announce any kind of ChatGPT integration.
I agree. All right. Now, that said, had I been part of the process of putting this presentation together let's go back a step farther. Had I been part of the development process and it had already been decreed that there will be ChatGPT accessibility, I would have proposed that it be done like, here's Apple Intelligence. All right, for those of you that are interested in other generative LLM models, we have the option for you to add that in so you can use that if you want.
Yeah.
But it would not be, here's our thing. Oh, by the way, we just partnered with ChatGPT.
Yeah, I feel like they gave ChatGPT way too much importance in that presentation.
I agree. I'm glad that at least sending requests to ChatGPT is an opt-in, not opt-out.
Yes. Yeah, I'm very glad. I will not be opting in.
What I'm hoping is that there's a global setting where I can just say, never suggest ChatGPT, because otherwise it's like every time Apple Intelligence thinks, oh, it might be able to get you more useful information from ChatGPT, you're going to get a pop-up where you have to say, no, I don't want that.
Yeah, sure. Surely. Or like, hopefully it's like once you decline it, you would then have to go and change it back.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
But we will see. We won't know how it works in real world use until this fall, because
it's not in the developer beta. So yeah, it won't Apple be in the first public betas.
Well, it's not going to be most likely in the first public release.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Apple Intelligence is coming as a beta this fall. So my assumption is we will get iOS 18, macOS Tall Trees, and then closer to the end of the year, the beta will become available for Apple Intelligence.
That seems reasonable. By the way, I'm realizing that we're butting up against your other show, which means that I'm going to be able to mix this podcast and send it to you, laugh, and call you a jerk.
You know,
yay me!
It's a cruel universe we live in.
So I guess to wrap up, I did learn this bit about Apple using stolen data live, and I'm coping with it. But regardless,
you know, it's important that people see that you are human too. Everyone has you on this pedestal and sees you as above human. So a little thing like this every now and then to remind them that it's okay to have these feelings.
Yes. So yes.
Thank you for doing that first.
You're welcome. So to wrap this up, I feel like Apple Intelligence was the bee's knees. I was so excited as they were going through it and so delighted that we hadn't heard anything about ChatGPT. And then they got to the bolted on product. And I cannot wrap my head around why Apple felt the need to jeopardize their groundbreaking announcement with this bolt-on integration. I don't understand it.
I mean, feeling like it was for the shareholders.
Okay, to the point.
That's why it's there.
Yeah, to that point, actually. Apple stock skyrocketed the next day.
Yeah, it went up over 200.
And it went 200 dollars a share. It didn't go up $200 a share.
Yes, that's what I meant. It was at like $209 at one point.
Right, and it's 214 right now. And that is 214.17 is what it closed at on Thursday. That's when we're recording this. That gives Apple a market cap of $3.3 trillion. That's so much money. That's so much money.
Wow.
And a PE of 33. That's good. So it was clearly well accepted by Wall Street. And to your point, I feel like it's because Wall Street is putting everything into the ChatGPT buzzword.
I really think that's the underlying motive for that part of the.
Yeah, but I feel like Apple could have changed the narrative on AI by not bringing ChatGPT up, let alone not doing this bolt-on integration. I feel like that Apple really could have changed, and maybe they still did change the narrative.
I think they have changed the narrative. But for now, the headlines are all Apple partners with ChatGPT for AI.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's super frustrating.
Which is unfortunate because that's not really the story.
No, it's not. Okay, well, but it seems like they didn't ask us for some reason.
Yeah, that's so weird.
Yeah.
You'd think since they scraped all our data, they could type in a query, what would Jeff and Brian say about including ChatGPT? Yeah,
they don't even have to ask us.
Because it used ChatGPT for that part, it probably came back and said, Brian and Jeff would wholeheartedly agree.
Or Brian and Jeff would say, put glue on it.
Right.
That was a Google thing. All right. So listen, we're late and you're about to record. So that's this week's Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, you can write us at contextmachinepodcast@gmail.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Dr. Boom, recorded for this show. And Jeff, that's all for this week.
Awesome. Hey, and thank you, LinkedIn Jobs, for being our sponsor.
Yes, thank you to LinkedIn Jobs. We appreciate you very much. And yeah, thanks.